This episode is brought to you by Indochino. Get any premium Indochino suit for just $389 at Indochino.com when you enter in the code GFQ at checkout.
What the heck?
Hey everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin, and of course I'm joined by the one, the only, Mr. Paul Thurrott. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
You told me a crazy story right before we started the show about how your house burnt down when you many years ago, 1987, because of pine.
because of a Christmas tree.
We were talking about how I'm allergic to everything. I have severe environmental allergy, not necessarily a
You're
lot
very
of food allergies.
Fragile, Andrew.
I am, actually. I'm very fragile. I'm a very delicate man.
That's the word.
And my wife bought all this, it's antique furniture for the boys' room. The boy that's on his way.
The boys' room.
Yeah. We have the girls' room. It's already set up. The girl's in the room. And then now the boys' room needs to be set up for the boy. And whatever this furniture is made out of, I don't know what kind of wood. I'm sure somebody in our audience knows, and you would... You know, I'll snap a picture and I'll send it to you. Whatever it is, since she brought it into the house, my eyes are on fire. It's almost like someone is scratching my eyes constantly.
I wonder if maybe the people who owned this before had like a cat.
I mean,
and what you're actually allergic to is like the animal dander that might be on it.
It's something. I don't know what it is because I left the house just to test out to see if, you know, it is the house or if it's just something in general. And I was fine for about 2 hours when I left the house today. And when I came back, it just started again. Like, it's even like my eyes are puffy.
Yeah.
It's terrible. So, sorry, guys. I look like a monster at this point, but blame Jessica. Tweet her at Jessica Zarian and tell her to get
this
furniture.
You ever think maybe she's doing
out.
It on purpose?
I sometimes do because I told her I think I'm allergic to the furniture and she goes, don't start. Don't start.
Great. Oh, by the way, I just bought some more.
Yeah, I bought more of it. I just want to have you turn into, you know, like the in Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
The kid turns into, what was it, a giant ball, right?
A blueberry.
There you go.
Yeah.
Paul, I do have a lot to talk about. We don't have notes today, but I have a lot of questions for you. Something I really want to touch on is Windows Cloud that Mary Jo Foley posted about this week. And very interested in this because it kind of goes hand in hand. And I have to tell you, out of all the things that we've done recently, this set-top box conversation that we've been having has really drawn the most attention. I mean, the whole cord cutting and the different types of set-top boxes, it seems like this is a real hot topic with people.
Well, that's good because I related to that in a way. I just wrote a story that was kind of an overview of set-top boxes. And I'm actually going to look into these things a little more closely. But one of the things I specifically want to look at is the set-top boxes that do allow you to do cord cutting in a better way, because some of them are actually kind of extensible with, you know, antenna support and TV you know, I think this is an interesting possible angle for the future. You know, we'll see. I mean, the other possibility too, by the way, is that we just forget about live TV and move on. But anyway, that's something I'm also kind of interested in personally. So.
By the way, I do want to talk about our sponsor, Indochino, but the chat room now is really into this about my allergy, and they said, check for mold. It sounds awful. You should check for mold.
Yeah, definitely.
Or did you clean the furniture first? Might be surface allergens, which it's quite possible. I mean, it's a lot of furniture. It's like a whole room. It's an armoire. It's a lot of furniture that she's going to repurpose, I guess. That's what she's doing. Right. So whatever it is, it's been a nightmare for me. But this is actually really good. We should check for mold, and we should check for a lot of that. So thank you guys in the chat room. But let's continue on. Let's talk about our sponsor, Indochino. These guys are unbelievable. I can't wait to get my Indochino suit. I have ordered it. I've done the measurements. This thing is awesome. So I spoke about it last week how I'm not that tall. I'm 5'9", 5'10 on a good day, I like to tell people. If I'm feeling very confident about myself and my hair is a little higher that day, I always tell people I'm 5'10", but I'm not. but it's so hard for me to find a suit that fits me perfectly. Here's a great thing. Indochino suits start at just $389. They're just $389, which is unbelievable. They're 50% off the regular price, and they're made-to-measure premium suits. If you use the offer code GFQ at checkout, you get 50% off, plus it's free shipping. Everybody could use a great suit. There's nothing that makes you feel more confident than a great suit. Now, here's the great thing about them. You could pick from hundreds of fabrics that they have on hand. You could choose customizations like the lapels, the jacket lining, and a whole lot more. You place your order, and you get it in just 4 weeks. This is unbelievable. The fact that you could do this at home, either you could go to an Indochino store if you have one by you, like there's one here in Manhattan, or you could do the measurements. They give you a whole way to do it. They tell you how to do it online. You measure it, you send it in, and you're good. Unbelievable stuff. I can't wait to get my suit. I got a couple more weeks till I get mine. I think I got like another week or so. Indochino.com. Go there right now and get a premium suit for just $389 at Indochino.com when you enter the code GFQ at checkout. I'm very, very excited about this. Let me see if I got it. Here you go. Look at this. You got a showroom. I mean, even the quality of their stuff is remarkable. You could choose from button downs. They got great shirts. They got classic suits. You could, even if you refer a friend, look at this. You get $100 off every time you refer a friend, they buy something. Great stuff. Indochino.com, guys. Go support them and let them know that we sent you. Tweet them. Let them know that you heard about it on the show. So, Paul, I want to talk to you about this.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk to you about Windows Cloud. Mary Gioffoli posted an article on ZDNet, and a lot of people are talking about this. So what is this? What is Windows Cloud?
Well, okay, so we can't really say for sure because we're working on a very limited amount of real-world information, yeah. Right? So there's a lot of speculation around it. There were rumors and so forth. But as we understand it, it is a coming new SKU or like product edition of Windows 10, just like Windows Home or Pro.
And Enterprise.
And Enterprise, right. Yeah. So just another one. The cloud naming is unclear. I don't understand, and no one seems to understand what the point is of that. But it will apparently only run store apps. So it won't run Win32 apps. Now,
huh. Well, sounds like something. Doesn't it sound like Windows RT?
Yeah. But here's the thing. A lot has changed, and this is where I sort of stepped in. My little editorial analysis of this is, you know, Windows RT and Surface RT, right, the primary device that ran that system, suffered from a few things, right? Performance was an issue with those ARM chips. But I think the big problem was the application compatibility thing, because you brought this thing up. It looked just like Windows 8.
Yeah.
It had a desktop. It could run the desktop applications that were built into it, including Office, right? Sure. Remember Office 2013 came with it. And then you would go to the web and you go to download iTunes or Chrome or something like that. And those things did not work on that system, right? So that was a problem. So flash forward to 2017, about 5 years later. Why would they be doing that again, right? Like why would you make that mistake again?
I have a theory and I'm a little afraid about it.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, please do.
This is Windows on ARM.
I don't think it is.
Okay.
And the reason I don't think it is because they've seen in some kind of internal files, there are multiple versions of this SKU, and there's no indication that they're ARM only. I think it's Intel and ARM. And actually, this goes back to something I wrote about years ago, where I wrote that in the context of Windows RT, that Microsoft had the chance for a platform do-over. And they had only done this
with what, Windows
one
8?
Other time. Well, with RT specifically, right? Because remember, RT was not going to run desktop applications. So here was a chance to cut a break with the past, go forward with something modern, and bring the Windows into the 21st century. Obviously, that didn't work. But at the time, I saw the potential of this, and I thought, this could be the next NT. Like, this could be something big, and it didn't work out. So what would the difference be really? Like people have drawn some interesting comparisons, like you. A lot of people go right to ARM. In fact, it's hard not to right off the top of your head think this has to be related to ARM, but it isn't. The other one is this is about Chromebooks. Like, this is going to be some cheap low-end version of Windows, like Windows
Atom
Starter, like Windows 8.1 with Bing. And you know what? I don't think so. I don't think it's that either. In fact, it doesn't mean that there won't be low-end computers with this system, but I think there will be premium laptops or whatever sold with this system as well. I don't think that is it. I think this is literally that Microsoft has felt for some time that they need to modernize Windows. And they've done everything they can to drag users and developers and businesses into this future, and nothing has worked. And so clearly what they need is a version of Windows RT that is not hampered by the problems with ARM, that can be upgraded to a full version of Windows if you want it to. Thus, it has to be x86, x64. It has to be.
Yeah.
Because the ultimately, if forget about the technical aspect of it, because I don't think most people even understood that anyway, normal people. The real problem with Windows RT was it looked like Windows, it acted like Windows, but it couldn't run those Windows apps. And so now we're doing it again because it was such a great idea, right? But give people an out. Like, in other words, if you buy a computer that has Windows Home on it, you can upgrade to Windows Pro.
But you couldn't do that with RT, obviously.
Couldn't do it with RT. There was no way. It was a one-way dead-end street, right? Once you went down that direction, you spent $600 or whatever it cost for that device, you were sunk.
Is it bad? I'm always positive, right? Like, I try to stay positive about technology. We'll make jokes about products, but, like, we always try to stay a little bit positive. For whatever reason, I personally feel like Microsoft will ruin this. And I feel like they'll do something like, hey, this is a free copy of Windows for Windows 7 users. Upgrade to Windows Cloud, and then you could possibly – and it's free.
Well, no, see, they can't do that. It can't be for upgraders because it doesn't run desktop applications. If you have a Windows 7 machine,
that's why
the only thing it has on there are desktop applications.
That's why I think it'll be a bad idea.
No. Yeah. So, look.
So it's not going to be some sort of weird
upgrade.
There's
zero indication to believe that this thing's going to succeed. But because the stores – and it's funny. I've actually written about a few of these things. Like, consider the following related things. Over the past several years, the biggest change in my workflow, personally, and I think this is true of a lot of people, and by the way, remember that Microsoft has tons of telemetry data and must know what people are doing, has been, for me, the move to web-based applications, right? A lot of us can get work done, most of our work done in the web.
And they're lighter, quicker,
If that's the case, this might be a viable computing system for a lot of people because not that Edge is great, and yes, Chrome is a desktop application, but it is a system that can accommodate that thing. It's a simpler system. It's a more reliable system. It's a more secure system. It's something just like Windows RT, you know, that you could hand to a child and say, use this, you will be safe. There is, I think, an audience for that kind of thing. But that's only half of it.
Yes, I agree with you 100%. So here's my take. I don't think they're going to say, like, hey, you got Windows XP? Go upgrade to Windows Cloud. Oh, you want to run Windows application? Actual app? Sorry.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. But it seems like, to me, it's going to be for maybe tablets, Windows-based tablets, which technically, why would you really want to run desktop apps on a tablet, on a lower-end tablet?
Like, those apps tend to be touch-friendly.
Yeah, you want touch-friendly applications that are lighter, quicker. So I can see it for that. I also see it, obviously, you're absolutely right. Chromebook competitors, right? Lower end, $100 and something dollar Chromebook competitors. Other than performance, right? Like, this thing has to be blazing fast to say, hey, I'm willing to sacrifice full Windows for something that's only running universal apps.
Well, the other issue here, and this is something I just wrote about today, not related to this, by the way, but it very much ties into this. The Universal Windows platform, the Windows Store platform, I guess we should call it, is lacking, right? I mean, the store is kind of woeful. There aren't that many high-quality apps. But it's kind of deeper than that. And Microsoft has done a lot to promote this platform to developers, to businesses, et cetera. But ultimately, you have to kind of look at Microsoft as the problem because the inbox apps – meaning the apps that come with Windows 10, they're okay. None of them are great. They're good. They're not world class. Microsoft also makes Office applications for this platform. those applications are also okay. They're okay. They're not good even. They're okay. Those applications need all to be world class for this thing to make any sense.
Yeah.
Microsoft cannot make a case for a version of Windows that can only run this kind of app when this kind of app looks like a toy. And that's the problem. And if you look at the article I did about this today, there's a side-by-side shot of Word 2016, which is the full desktop application, and Word Mobile, which is the, you know, UWP version. And Word Mobile looks like a Tinker toy, you know? I use this joke a lot, so I apologize, but I am middle-aged. You know, the only thing missing is like a little hand crank so you can make bubbles come out of it. You know, it's
yeah,
it's a children's toy.
Yeah.
I mean, you can make documents and you can print and stuff like that. It's, you know, yeah, it's basic. But those apps, you know, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, Outlook needs to get in there. There's something built into Windows that's sort of Outlook. But that stuff all needs to be on UWP. It doesn't have to be the full 100% Office 2016, but it needs to be in the middle somewhere. It needs to be way better.
So, Paul, is the end of the line for Microsoft that the end goal that they slowly fade away from Windows applications and they go
to... Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, but so why hasn't there been more of an aggressive push towards this?
If you have
Windows 10, why can't... have Windows, and I'm not saying this is the right decision to make.
Andrew,
right?
Listen, we could spend the entire show just talking about this topic.
We have nothing else.
This is so complicated and there's so much to it. But consider just a couple of things. Microsoft has not made a successful new applications platform since 2000. I don't know. It's been a long time. I trace this back to Longhorn, the several year development, how it went nowhere fast, and developers started off very excited. In fact, I mentioned this briefly today, but at the event where they unveiled Longhorn, developers were fighting each other to get into the first seats in the auditorium because they wanted to be there for this. They went from that to being completely ambivalent about it. And by the way, by the time Windows Vista shipped, the iPhone came out and the whole world just changed. It didn't happen overnight, but it started happening very quickly about a year later when they, you know, it's the comet that destroyed the dinosaur, you know? Yeah. So that's one thing. You know, the other thing is that we have a very rich history and collection or library of Windows applications that date back decades. One of Windows' biggest strength has been this backwards compatibility. We'll always work with the stuff from the past, but it's also the double-edged sword of its biggest weakness as well. Yeah. We just rely on these really old applications. I've told the story a few times now, but I had internal documentation when Windows 8 shipped that the top 10 most used applications on Windows 8 were Chrome, iTunes, and then 8 little utilities, most written by individuals, that just fixed Windows 8 so it didn't suck anymore.
Yeah,
that is a slap in the face to a company like Microsoft trying to make a platform that they want people to use. Chrome and iTunes are both platforms to get you off of Windows, and the other things are things that subvert all the stuff they were doing in Windows. So there's a problem. There's like this huge disconnect. There hasn't been a major new application developed on Windows in forever. In fact, Chrome might be the last one. There just hasn't been.
I'm trying to think what it would. I think you may be right. You're talking major. Major application, widely
critical.
Used.
Everyone needs it.
Yeah.
You know, Microsoft makes applications. You know, for Office 365. But by the way, most of those run in the cloud. There just isn't. There's no such thing. Yeah. All the big apps of the past several years have come out on mobile, not on Windows.
Yeah,
and so there's just been this shift. So by the way, to give them some credit, they've taken these kind of interim steps, and I think cloud could be an interim step. For example, there's something called Project Centennial, the desktop bridge, which allows a developer to take their existing desktop application, wrap it in a UWP container, essentially like an AppV container, really. But they can sell it in the store. It has all of the benefits of a UWP app from one-click install, one-click uninstall. It doesn't spread garbage all over your file system. It doesn't infect your registry with all of its bullshit. It's
a sandbox.
Exactly. It takes this dirty, ugly, awful thing and makes it clean. That's nice. But then you can go above that and you can add UWP features to that app, and it becomes sort of a hybrid application where it can do notifications even when it's not running. It can participate in the share charm. which we're probably not calling that anymore or whatever, but it can do these UWP things. It can have like a live tile on the start menu. So that's smart and that's really cool. And hopefully that stuff works in this cloud thing. Like in other words, hopefully it's not UWP, it's store apps, right?
Yeah.
But I think the ability to upgrade later to Windows 10, like full Windows 10, Windows 10 Pro or whatever, is perhaps the key to this product, because this is a way to get something out in the world where it is not a one-way dead-end street, right? That if you are completely uneducated about the product, in other words, the PC maker should be explaining what this is before you buy it, right? I don't know how they do this, but let's say that, you know, however, whatever. And then you get it and it still doesn't work, you should be able to upgrade to Windows 10 Pro right there, right in the product,
yeah,
and not have to worry about it. And that, and the Microsoft hasn't screwed you. Now, are they going to charge you for that? Yeah.
Of course. Yeah, of course they're going
to
charge
you. But if you were to complain to their support line, should Microsoft just give it to you because you feel like you were deceived? Yes. Yes, they should.
I want to continue. This is very interesting, and I'm getting so many comments right now from people that know me personally on Facebook. They have questions for you now because they're very interested because they're in IT. Yeah. And this is probably the first time that they've heard about this. I want to talk about that, but before we do, I want to talk about something else that is very meaningful to us, and that's our Patreon page. Each and every week, Paul and I do the show, and afterwards, we do a bonus show. And that's exclusively available on patreon.com/whatthetech. And you guys fund this show. And it's not necessarily just for the show. You guys are funding what we do here. But with $1 per show, you guys are able to fund this. And we're able to continue doing this. And it helps us pay Suncast, which he's our editor. And Paul's been working with him. So you know how much work he puts in and how quick he is. And he's a godsend to us, actually, here at the GFK Network. He does everything. Yeah. I just stand there. I just look at him work, which is amazing. So a lot of this pays for that and our servers and our hosting. Pretty much that's what this goes to. So if you like the show and you enjoy the show, fund us. Go to patreon.com/whatthetech. Give us a dollar, and we're going to be doing some bonus shows. And also, we have something really cool happening. We have this phone system that's provided by the fine folks at the Telos Alliance. This is the Telos VSET 6. This is a six-line phone system. We just got the IQ6 installed here, so we're going to be doing a phone call show. We're going to be taking your phone calls. We're going to be answering the calls. I'm buying the SIP lines, which is the voice over IP lines, this week. And again, this is what you guys are funding, you know, the progress and the growth of the show. Patreon.com/whatthetech. Fund us. We're going to have some cool new goals set up. Maybe we could do like a giveaway, Paul. I have some stuff here, like that that orange laptop that I got. Maybe we could give that away, or I got the that iPad kind of knockoff Windows tablet. Sure. Maybe we could give that away too on the show to Patreon members. So I'm thinking we could do some cool stuff. Patreon.com/whatthetech, guys. Go there and fund us. But here's the confusion, Paul. Don't you, with Windows Cloud, right? What's the benefit for the OEMs to use this? Is it that it might be free for the OEMs and it's a great way to get people to have Windows? Or is this going to be for much lower end devices to run Windows at a, you know, that they normally wouldn't be able to run Windows? Or what if you have an old piece of hardware that you want to put this on? Could this be a free version of Windows that you could put on? Let's say you have Windows XP or Windows 7. Yeah, like
what if it was free and it only ran?
And it only ran just their cloud based services, which I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of people that most likely will install this on an older laptop if they're running Ubuntu, or they're running, and I'm not saying everybody, right? Ubuntu is a way more technical operating system. But let's say you're considering a Chromebook because you have this older laptop. I have one sitting right here across from me. It's a AMD A6 processor.
Sure.
And it's not that great. It doesn't run the stuff that I want to run. But if this version of Windows is way lighter than the current version of Windows 10, and I can install this for free, and now what it does to Microsoft is that it gets you away from Windows 7. So those numbers, those analytics, go up for Windows 10, right? What did we say? Almost 50% of users are still using Windows 7 last week. What if this skews it? What if this could change it to 30%? Because here's a free version of Windows, and all you do on here is use a web client, the email client, a chat client, and that's it. You're good. Now you're on Windows 10, so Microsoft can say, look, 1 billion users.
Right. The problem is that going forward, Chromebooks will be able to run Android apps, right?
Yeah.
So you have a combination of two viable platforms like Chrome for the web, which is great, and Android for like native apps, which is also pretty great. I mean, there are problems with Android apps running on full screen, tablet-sized screens and so forth. So it's not perfect, but you know, the potential is kind of there. The problem with this thing, assuming that we're correct about what we think it is that, you know, it's a browser nobody really wants to use, Edge, combined with a mobile apps platform that frankly hasn't taken off yet. This is the Achilles heel of this whole system. So what would be the advantage? I don't think it's going to be significantly lighter weight than Windows 10 normal.
Yeah.
I think it will be more efficient because what you won't have on that system, and this was a key advantage for Windows RT, was desktop things being installed and screwing stuff up, right? That adding stuff to the registry, proliferating files all over the file system, adding startup items, running silently in the background and draining the battery without you knowing about it. Those types of things can't happen in the UWP ecosystem because that's a managed mobile platform and the system takes care of all that stuff. You don't have to worry about it. So I don't think it's going to be significant. I think it will be more efficient. But I guess the, I don't want to say the only, but I guess maybe the primary advantage of that system over a Chromebook would be that for free or for some small fee, you know, who knows how they do this, you'd be able to upgrade to Windows 10, mm-hmm. like full Windows 10, yeah. right? And Chromebook, you know, I think Chromebook meets a need even today without the Android apps for some number of people. But I also think there's a bigger audience of people that we don't really hear about that bought a Chromebook and returned it, bought a Chromebook and stopped using it because, frankly, it is in its own way, its own version of a one-way dead-end street. There's no way out of it. If you get that thing and it doesn't meet your needs, you can't upgrade it to something later something that makes else, it better. Yeah.
Well, I guess you could put you could put Linux on there, but it's still a pain in the butt,
okay,
right?
But that's a very you bought a system for a child or a non-technical user, yeah. and now what you're describing is a process that only a very technical person could undergo. That's yeah. not a, you know, so it's effectively it's off the table.
Well, here's the problem with Chromebooks. I mean, they have the same problem that Android does, right? They had promised this Android support on a lot yeah. of their lines, and still yeah. to this day, the ones that were promised in the beginning have not. Gotten
I know yeah Android that's gone support. Nowhere fast. I mean I think that happens this year. I think 2017 will be the year that happens. It's going to be not so great at first for some apps and so forth, but it happens. Let's just say it happens. It's fine. The other issue by the way, or the other thing that Chromebook solves, is this giant market that sits between individuals or consumers and big businesses. And that giant market encompasses all kinds of things, but primarily it's education and it's small businesses where they have the need for enterprise class services, manageability of devices and licenses and, you know, email and all that kind of stuff. But they don't have the infrastructure to support it. They don't or can't afford to have even one person on staff who only does that stuff. And so what they need is the type of thing that can be managed by real human beings. And so one of the, well, maybe the only place where Chromebook is successful today is in the United States education market. And one of the reasons is this is a very cash constrained market. They don't have a lot of technical expertise when it comes out to role, like deploying or supporting technology. And Chromebook on the back end, Google has created a very simple kind of web-based service for managing those devices and doing things like, you have a lab full of computers, group of students comes in, they do stuff on the computers, they leave, teacher presses a button, they all get wiped out back to the way they were from the factory. The new groups of students come in, they log in, they get their own environment, off they go, and again and again and again. And Microsoft has created about 117 versions of what I just described, but they were all expensive yeah. and complex. So one of the big question marks is going to be what the management of this system looks like and whether it's any different from the management of like a traditional Windows 10 computer. And hopefully it is. And I'll just, as a, not speculation, but this is kind of a side story, we'll point out that last week Microsoft announced a product called Intune for Education, which is sort of what I just described for Chrome, except for Windows. And so it's basically like a mobile device management solution for phones and tablets and by the way, for Windows 10 PCs. So It's possible that's their answer. I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the direction for Windows is very interesting right now because they are trying new things, and Windows 10 has been a success in my opinion. I mean, in many people's opinion, it's been a great success. Sure. It's a great operating system. Obviously, they had a lot of pushback because of the forcefulness of what they were doing, but overall, it's a very good operating system, and if they can make it lighter and quicker and faster on lower-end machines, why not do that? But the benefit of just if they allow you to upgrade, for example, right, to Windows Home or Windows Pro, what is the benefit for Microsoft to supply this version of Windows other than just for performance?
Well, because they see they're the ones who invented this idea. I looked at it 4 or 5 years ago. I'm looking at it today, and I'm kind of coming away with the same thing they are, which is, we see this as the future of Windows, that this system that we have in place that's been there for decades, Win32.net, whatever you want to call it, the desktop world, is a liability. And we understand that the world runs on that today, but we need to get off that as quickly as possible. But we also understand that no one is interested in a hard stop. Windows RT didn't succeed for many reasons. One of them was that one-way dead-end street I keep talking about. So I think that for those people or companies that can't do this, you need to give them a way to keep doing what they were doing. But you do want to kind of push people in a certain direction. And like I said, they have all this telemetry data. I think they know something that a lot of us, especially more technical people, don't understand. And that's probably something to the tune of, most people just get stuff done on the web now. You know, they only need these other things for a couple of things. And by the way, you know, one of the reasons I think that this thing is not going to be relegated to, let me say two of them, two reasons maybe, that it isn't going to be relegated to low-cost devices only, meaning like Chromebook, like competitors, is one, Microsoft is making a very big push for gaming on UWP.
Yeah.
Those games do not run on low-end computers. You need a very high-end computer to run a high-quality game on Windows today, and those things are not inexpensive. But the other one is, you know, the types of people who care about simplicity and elegance and kind of the finer points of computing without regards to, say, esoteric specifications or app compatibility, whatever, are all over the map, right? I mean, people with lots of money don't want a computer that's complex any more than anyone else does.
Nobody
right?
Does. I mean, everybody wants an appliance at this point. I mean, that's the era we're in.
Yeah, it just works is a feature. You know, and who knows? Like, I'm not saying that a Windows 10 cloud computer will get like 25% more battery life, or will be 50% more reliable, or will be 90% less apt to say get malware or whatever. But actually, maybe I am saying that. Yeah. You know, or whatever the numbers are. Like, at some point, if they can categorically say, "Look, this is what you get from this," there are going to be some people like it just kind of clicks in their head, and they're like, "Yes, that's." That's exactly what I want.
You know, we have a way more technical audience than majority of the computer users. And I was one of these people that really didn't care for appliances. I wanted whatever I had to do more than they possibly could. I want to customize. Great example, routers, right? Those Linksys routers, the WRT54G. Everybody wanted that router because you could put a different firmware on it, and you could do this, and you could tweak this, and you could tweak that. I think that's great for a lot of situations and for some people. But now, I'm even convinced that the appliance way is the way to go for a lot of devices. We use Skype boxes here on the studio. We have four individual Skype machines in the basement. Do you know what kind of pain in the ass it is for me to turn these things on and make sure they're not crashing, and there's a Windows update, and there's a driver update, and sometimes they work right? It's such a pain in the butt where I would actually benefit from having an individual, you know, box like the Skype TXs that they're making, which is just a dedicated box running Skype. That's all it is.
Yep.
In a scenario like that, you know what? I would take the appliance over something that I could customize and hack and do whatever I want to do. I think
the evolution of virtually every product ever made. The automobile in the early days was something to own one. You had to know how to fix it. There isn't a human being alive in the United States who knows how to fix the car today. I mean, not just because they're so complex, but because the necessity just isn't there. Anyone can walk in, you know, get in a car, turn a key, not even turn a key, push a button now, start it, put it in drive and go. I mean, it doesn't require expertise.
You don't need to know
manual. There will always be those people who think that this world is terrible, that we should have an innate understanding of everything. Sure. But the fact remains that this benefits the most people when it's not like that.
Manual and automatic. That's a great example of it, right?
Yeah.
I could drive a manual. I did for many years. Do I want to drive a manual? No, not really. I live in the city and I want to just
I prefer a manual.
I know you do.
But yes. There's nothing like being stuck in traffic in a manual. You want to kill yourself.
You know, it's fun for a while and you get to control the car more than it controls you. But the reality is most people, including myself now, for the amount that I'm paying for a car, I want the car to do everything for me. I want the car to make me a cappuccino if I wanted it to at this point.
Yes. By the way, it's normal. Yeah. That's just normal. Not the cappuccino thing. But
the cappuccino thing is very normal. You have a very interesting article on Therat.com about the next generation of Chromebooks, and it kind of leads into this. But before we continue, I want to talk about Therat.com and the premium membership. Guys, I'm a Therat member. I have a Therat member ID number. What is my number? Let's see. Hello. Mm-hmm. I'm going to write hello. It's a crap post. I'm alpha member 27.
27?
I'm number 27 on Therat.com. Hmm. I'm proud of that number.
Sure.
Are you proud that that's my number? I'm very proud that that's my number. Every time
my number might be one or something.
Is your number one? I don't think you're number one.
It is, or zero, or some low number.
I think George is number one. George is going to be number one.
How did you find your number?
Whenever I make a post on the forum. I'm sorry, not the forum. The comment section. It says my number. I'm going to delete this because it's a shit post now. It just says hello. But I'm number 27. On Therat.com. And guys, I really, really recommend it. This is not a paid read. I'm not doing this because Paul's a friend of mine. I'm doing this because I genuinely enjoy going to Therat.com and getting those great premium articles. And Brad actually wrote a very nice premium article the other day. I had it right here and I dropped it. I don't know where I put it.
I still don't understand where you're seeing this.
Okay, so if I post in the comments section, everybody's alpha number shows up. Like next to your name on the alpha, like on the when you comment.
Oh,
on
you actually have to post it.
Yeah. You got to post to see what it is. But here's a great one. The Pixel is a Pixel successful? You wrote that the other day. These are premium articles that you get on Therat.com, and it's only a couple bucks a month. You sign up, you get access to all these great bonus articles. You get access to forum. You get access to the daily show that Paul does, First Ring Daily. Spell out the domain name, please, says Dr. Bob. Hazelwood. It's Therat.com. Therott.com. People need to know how to spell it. Big support of the site, Paul, and you guys have done such a tremendous job. And every day, everybody on that team is great. Tim is working his butt off on that website. Brad does so much, even to the point that he's dying sick now.
Yes,
that's
how we push people at my company.
Yeah, to almost. Yep. I produce content for you guys. Suncast does the editing now, so it's this weird extended family outside of the Therat brand. But there's so much happening and so much going to go on. More and more great stuff is coming. Therat.com. Go sign up for the premium stuff there. Let's talk about the next line of Chromebooks because this kind of plays a part, and you could kind of see the direction that they're going in, and it's actually fascinating how well built a lot of these Chromebooks have gotten. And I'm gonna turn this Chromebook on that I have. I have an Acer Chromebook 14. If somebody in the chat room could tell me if this has Android support, because a couple of weeks ago it does not. That's terrible.
I have the business version of that laptop, and it's been killing me. I really want to test this, you know. I might have to just suck it up and grab one that already has
what's
the support.
Scary? I paid more for this because this was a newer model and it did not get it. And an older, crappier model got it. And it drives me nuts.
It's frustrating.
But they do have a new line of products coming out. It's about time. And some of them were Google broke their silence in early January regarding the next generation of Chromebooks that were on the way. But you actually have a great post detailing all the new stuff that's coming out.
Yeah, I mean, without going into specific models, I mean, the thing you need to know about Chromebooks that's changing is that the new models, the ones we're going to see this year, will be touch-based always, right? So you can, because Android apps are designed for touch, and so that helps there. Pen-based in many cases, so you'll be able to use an active or a passive electromagnetic pen and write on the screen, which is kind of a cool thing. And many of them will support a 2-in-1 form factor, like we see with Microsoft Surface devices, where either it's kind of a like the device you're showing here, which is a laptop clamshell type device. We can flip the screen around and use it like a big heavy tablet, or in like a tent mode, which is what that picture is showing. Or even devices perhaps with detachable keyboards, right? So it becomes an actual tablet without the keyboard. In the PC space, you know, people will tell you, and they're correct, that we've had this capability for many, many years. In fact, convertible PCs debuted in 2002 with Windows XP Tablet PC Edition. The thing is, they have become very, this form factor has become very popular in the past, I'd say, 4 years or so, thanks in large part to Microsoft Surface. And so much so that Apple has copied it with the iPad Pro, that Google has copied it with the Pixel, although, by the way, that's an Android device. I should say the Pixel C. But now they're going to add this to Android, right? And this suggests that a future Pixel laptop, because you remember they made two Chromebook Pixels, will probably be this kind of thing. Will it run Android? Well, it will be. I'm sorry. I should say it will certainly be, if they release one this year, will be like a hybrid device that does Chrome OS, of course, but also these Android apps. And so this stuff was supposed to happen last year, actually. Yeah. As you alluded to, this has been taking longer than expected.
So way longer, yeah.
I think there were some technical hurdles that Google didn't, or maybe underestimated or whatever, but it appears this is finally happening. So there's been some announcements, companies like Acer, actually, and Dell, and I think Lenovo and a few others, Samsung was the first one, where we're finally going to see this spring, this new generation of Chromebook devices. And I don't know what to call it generationally. It's like the second or third generation, depending on how you want to look at it. But Chromebooks so far have mostly been laptop, pure laptop form factors. We've seen some touch devices, and we have seen a handful of convertibles, but this is kind of formally now a Chromebook thing. So I'm not saying that every Chromebook going forward will do all this stuff, but I think pretty much to be viable.
In the market, yeah. They kind of have to. It's interesting how Chromebooks have become the Linux of this generation, right? Technically, it is Linux, but...
But, you know, they occupy an interesting slice of the computer market. So it's low end of the market to maybe the mid-tier of the market, whereas PCs span the entire range all the way up to really expensive premium PCs. And I know the Pixel was very expensive, but that was obviously an esoteric kind of niche computer. But
reference device, yeah.
Yeah. I think bringing these capabilities down to the low end of the market is very important. And I think in the same vein that most people only have very basic computing needs when it comes to like a laptop or a desktop computer, these Chromebooks kind of enter in at that right part of the market, because most users of those machines will probably be using an Android phone or even a little tablet or something as their primary device, but then they'll turn to this to get work done. And it might be enough for a lot of people, and that should be a concern to Microsoft, and it should be a concern, you know, to Apple, actually.
It's interesting. I don't know what the future of Chromebooks are, if they are, you know, I think the Android application thing is a major, major selling point for them, because think of how emerged in applications this thing is. It's quite the opposite issue that Windows has. Windows can't, people aren't developing for their for their store, and people are developing. It's actually really funny how they're kind of backwards, you know?
Yeah. Well, actually, that's okay. You just raised an interesting point that kind of ties back to something I said earlier. There has been no major Windows application development over the past many years. There has been a lot of web application development. In fact, web applications are becoming increasingly sophisticated. Microsoft, when it releases new applications for Office 365, almost universally releases them on the web. Those applications will all run fine on a Chromebook, right? So even though today you can't technically run Office applications like Word or Excel natively on Chrome OS, in the near future, you'll be able to run the Android versions of those apps, which are kind of toy-like apps, but they're, you know, they're there. You'll be able to run the web apps, which are a step above the mobile apps, and you'll be able to run the new apps that run only in the web. And I'll bring mine. This will take 20 minutes and be a terrible waste of our time, but let me see if I can bring it in. if I go to Office 365, I have Office 365 accounts for both. Yeah, it's always so difficult. Sorry. For both consumer and business. But if I can go, it's really ponderous to do this, but if it would let me. Here we go. So if I go to my work account or my like Office 365 commercial account. There we go. Sorry, that took so long. There are such things as Yammer, OneDrive for Business, SharePoint, Planner, Delve, Sway, Power Apps, Flow, Dynamics, Bookings, and more. That are they're all on the web. They're just on the web. Like that's those are just on the web.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Sway I think is actually available in a native app, but it's a web app, and what that means is anyone can use this thing. And so even like this is also Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, et cetera. Also Mail, Calendar, you know, People, all that stuff too. And it's not that the web version of Word is just as good as the, you know, Word 2016 that you would run on your Windows desktop. But you know what? It's for most people, it's pretty damn close.
It's very, very
and it's a lot better than the mobile app version. In fact, it's a lot closer to 2016 than it is to the mobile app version.
Yeah. Before we wrap it up, Paul, and then we're going to do our bonus show. If you're watching live, we're going to do our bonus show. I want to ask you about what happened to Kenya. You were supposed to go to Kenya this week and did not happen, so we're going to be discussing that. Any news about Build this year? It's in May. I know it's a little early, but is there any rumblings as to what the primary focus is going to be this year?
Oh, no. Actually, I thought you were going to – the big concern with Build this year has been from people who want to go, and they're getting antsy about how they're going to get in because – it's been later than usual, you know, for Microsoft to put that up. But actually, the reason it's been later than usual is that the show itself is later than usual in a year. No, I think it's given the timing, which is May, it's fair to think that a lot of the stuff we talked about today was going to be on the list there. You know, like how are they going to advance UWP? How does Windows 10 Cloud factor into all this stuff? I mean. I think you're going to see VR, AR, mixed reality, whatever you want to call it, is going to be a big thing. 3D, obviously.
Surface phone?
No, it's not.
Can you believe it? People are still talking about it. They want the Surface every day. Every day. Someone just sent me an article saying, I don't know who posted this, but I think the article was something along the lines of, Microsoft doesn't hit a home run at Build. Surface phone is dead. I go, it doesn't exist.
That's idiotic.
I don't know who wrote it. I gotta find the article. Somebody sent me that article the other day.
Sad.
This morning, actually. I was like, well, I don't know how it could be dead if it doesn't exist, but okay.
Sure.
I guess they're going based on that foldable device.
I'm sure Microsoft, you know, the Surface team would love to build a phone. I'm sure that they have all these ideas. I'm sure some of them are great ideas, but nothing fixes the fact that the app platform isn't there on the phone, especially, and it is a non-starter.
It's
that thing has been dead in the water for years.
Pre-dead.
What do you call it?
Pre-dead.
Pre-dead. Yeah. You just don't make something because it's cool or you know you like the form factor. Even though we have no software to run it, here's this cool device. Like that doesn't actually make any sense.
It's
too bad, but it's the way it is.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. Yeah, all right, Paul, time for our bonus show. If you're watching this live, stay tuned. We're going to record our bonus show. If you're listening to the podcast, go to patreon.com/whatthetech. Fund us there. Support the show. Support what we do. If you've been listening to this for a while, it helps us pay the bills here for hosting and things like that. If you are listening to this on YouTube, go and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are available. If you listen to us on iTunes, go and subscribe on YouTube. We're everywhere podcasts are available. For all things Paul, go to therot.com, at therot on Twitter. You can follow me at Andrew Zarian. Of course, the GFK Network is on there too, and all the other shows that we do. If you're into pro wrestling, you could listen to Mat Men, which is, I have to tell you, the crossover between What the Tech and Mat Men is astonishing to me. Tremendous amount of people cross over from both. A lot of wrestling tech fans, so it works in my benefit. I'll tell you that. And I love the emails, by the way. Guys, that's it for this week. We'll see you all next time.